Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk. Neve Solicitors, your complete legal solution.
Welcome to The Parent Show on Radio Vellum 92.6. I'm Cathy Weston.
And I'm Shirley Heyman.
Thanks for joining us tonight. It's not an easy topic, but it is certainly a very, very important one. Tonight we are talking about paediatric brain tumours. Brain tumours being, Shirley, one of the biggest cancer killers of children and adults, actually under 40. But yet it's not really something a lot of people know a lot about.
And certainly I knew very little until we started researching it this week, Cathy. And it's been quite shocking, hasn't it, actually?
Yeah, it really has been. I mean, we've discovered a lot, but we realised that over 9,000 people are diagnosed with a brain tumour every year. And over 500 of these are children and young people. And 25% of these will die, and that's one child every 3 days. And almost 5,000 people lose their lives to a brain tumour every year. Tonight we're focusing on children and raising awareness with the help of some very brave mummies who are coming, one of whom's in the studio with us and one of whom will be joining us in just a few moments. We'll just take a little tiny break and we'll come back to you with Michelle Rodd, who's a local mum who's got a very sad but very important story to tell.
It's a wet evening, but we're very grateful to have Michelle Rodd on the phone now. Michelle, good evening. Are you there?
Hi, good evening.
Hi, it's Shirley speaking, and thanks so much for agreeing to come on.
Oh, no problem.
Michelle, we've got another mummy in the studio and quite a lot of people we want to talk tonight. So, I mean, you could share your story for the whole hour, probably.
but we
probably have got, you know, about 12 to 15 minutes to try and raise awareness and, you know, for you to share what's happened to you. We've invited you on because we know, and the listeners will now hear, that your story did have quite a tragic ending, didn't it? But we know how passionate you are about raising awareness about brain tumours in children for the benefit of other families, you know, locally and nationally.
We're trying our best.
Yeah, and I know from what I've seen, you know, you are doing an amazing job. Will you tell us a little bit about yours and George's story, Michelle?
Should I just start at the start to give people an idea? Basically, George, 3.5 years old, happy, healthy, really bright little boy, absolutely no problems. He's got a twin brother as well and an older brother. Absolutely fine. Easter Sunday, he was fine, doing an Easter egg hunt in the garden. And then on Easter Monday, he was bouncing on the trampoline in the garden whilst I was watching him. And when he went to get up from being on all fours, his leg, I could see his legs weren't working properly. It sounds silly, but I just knew that wasn't, something was wrong. And when I took him off the trampoline, he fell over. And I thought, okay, he's been overbounced. Brought him inside, gave him some lunch, he had a nap. And he woke up and he was fine. On the Tuesday, he fell to the floor, very randomly, just dropped to the floor and said he felt wobbly. So I thought, right, that's strange. But again, then he was fine. And then the Wednesday, he dropped to the floor again while we were walking in a Marks and Spencer's. And I thought, right, this is very odd. So I rang the doctors and I explained that I'd definitely seen something a bit odd with his movement in walking. His gait just wasn't right. I couldn't get an appointment that day, but they said, see how he is in the morning. Thursday morning, he woke up with a really strange head tilt. His head was completely tilted to the left. He got out of bed and started walking into things, the doorway, the frame. And again, I could see he was unbalanced on his feet. He was a bit shaky. He said he felt funny. Obviously, he was 3.5. He could communicate really, really well. He was crying. I rang the doctors, took him to the doctors, and they did all the obvious observational checks. Ears, throat, temperature, is he eating, checked his stomach, and just kept saying to me, he's fine, he must have a virus. Now, because I'd said it started on the trampoline, the doctor kind of jumped on the bandwagon of that and decided that he'd obviously banged his side on the trampoline and was overcompensating with tipping his head to the left. But I was assuring him I'd watched my son on the trampoline the entire time, and that wasn't the case at all.
Yeah.
So the doctor sent me home on a Thursday with Nurofen to give him, and if it hadn't cleared up within 2 to 3 weeks to bring him back. So the Friday morning I rang the doctor and I said, look, I'm actually not happy with what you said to me yesterday. So the doctor said, bring in a urine sample. So I dropped that off at 9 o'clock in the morning, and at 10:30 the doctor called me and said, it's all clear, you really shouldn't worry about him, it must be some sort of virus, just keep an eye on him over the weekend. But because the doctor had called me back so quickly as well, it kind of made me think, I think he maybe thinks there's more to it, but he's not trying to panic me. But over the weekend, George stopped falling to the floor. He just kept his head tilt. So on the Saturday and Sunday, kept his head tilt. And I thought he'd got a bit of double vision. We were reading books. I was asking him to count things, and I noticed he was squinting, and he was saying there were two cows when there was one, and I thought, this is odd.
Right.
So Sunday night, I actually woke my husband up, and I'd been Googling, one of my favourite things to do, and I just thought, I'll just put in a couple of these symptoms that George seems to have, and I literally just typed in balance coordination problems and abnormal head tilt, and straight away on Google it brought up a Head Smart campaign, which is run by the Brain Tumour Charity.
Yeah.
And it says, under five, preschool children, things to look out for in brain tumours, and they were two of the five things. So I thought, right, there's only five things that you can, that they say to look out for. I think he's got two of them. So I woke my husband up and I said, look, you know, don't think I'm acting like a crazy, neurotic mother, but I think there's something seriously wrong with George. And he said, right, okay, I agree. He's had this issue for a week. I'll come to the doctors with you tomorrow. So we went to the doctors, all of us, the other children as well, because it was the Easter holidays.
Yeah.
And the doctor said to me, now you brought your husband, I'm sensing you definitely think there's something wrong. Which infuriated me a little bit, because I definitely knew there was something wrong. He did all the same checks on George again that he'd done with him on the Thursday, but kept saying to myself and my husband, it is a virus. So I said to the doctor, I hope you don't mind, but I'd like to show you what I've Googled and what it's brought up on my phone. So if you'd care to take a minute, could you read this? And he did. And he said, I've never heard of Head Smart, but I can see where you're coming from. He said, Google can be obviously a good tool and a bad tool, but in this case, maybe, you know, you've stumbled upon something. What would you like me to do? So I said, well, I'd like you to send him for a scan, not knowing the difference between CT scans or MRI scans, being a complete novice at all of this. So he wrote a referral letter then and there, and put in big bold letters across the top, for the L&D of hospital, mum believes this is a brain tumour. Off we go to the hospital, who I'm insisting that our son is walking fine and he's okay, and I'm telling them he's not okay, and eventually they agreed to give him a CT scan, which took up till about 6:30 that night for us to persuade the hospital that he needed a scan. They scanned him, and then they just casually walked up to us and said, actually, there's nothing there, we've just had a look, there's nothing there, take him home. So we were like, are you sure there's nothing there? No, there's nothing there, and just give him Nurofen. Give him Nurofen now for another 3 weeks, and if there's still a problem, bring him back. So they patted us literally on the back, out you go, he's fine. And I still wasn't satisfied with that.
Yeah.
So rang the doctor on the Tuesday, said to the doctor what they told me, said I wasn't happy. Then I said to the doctor, right, I'll get him an eye test. Took him to Boots Opticians, they gave him an eye test, really brilliant, thorough examination. The lady said, I think maybe I can see a tiny bit of pressure build up at the back of his eye, but his vision is impeccable, it's brilliant, he's got 20/20 vision. So I said, oh, well, is there anybody further I could take him to? They said, take him to an ophthalmologist. So I thought, well, we've got private cover, I'll do that. So the next day I took him off to the Spire Clinic for a full eye examination. But by this point, he was now wobbly on his feet again. He was lethargic. He could hardly, you know, he couldn't stay awake. He was very shaky. His head tilt had got even worse. And when I took him in there, the chap straight away knew I was onto something. And he did an eye examination for an hour and a half and then said to me, I can't believe they've sent you away. I'm going to ring the L&D and insist that you get an MRI scan, which he did.
Right.
We went straight back to the L&D, who then decided, this all happened at 10 o'clock in the morning, they left us waiting until 7 o'clock at night, still wouldn't give us an MRI scan, and eventually agreed to, but said we had to take him back the next day, which we did. So we took him back in the morning, where they gave him an MRI scan, and again all the nurses were saying, it's not going to be a problem, he's going to be fine, you know, you really are worrying about nothing. well, he went in to the MRI room. He was in there double the time that he was supposed to be in there. And then when he came out, they took us into a room and said, yes, you're right, he has got something. He's got an abnormality at the back of his brain. And the best we can do is get you to Adam Brooks Hospital straight away, where you'll be transferred today.
So was that, how long was that after your first...
I first noticed something wrong with George on the 1st of April.
Yeah.
And it was the 12th that we got the MRI scan.
So 12 days until you got the scan.
12 days, yeah, 12 days until I got the scan. So we got transferred to Adam Brooks, and we got taken into a room at about 2:30 a.m. in the morning, where they said, right, we've had all the scans sent over from the L&D, and we can confirm that George has got a golf ball-sized tumour at the back of his head, in what's called the cerebellum, which is your fourth nerve, which alters your balance and your coordination. This will be the problem with why he's got the head tilt. And unfortunately, we can see it's also encased his spine. So they said, we really do have a huge problem here. But it's now the weekend and our team are off until Monday. So you'll be okay with this information, but you'll have to stay here and we'll deal with it on Monday, kind of thing. So it basically, that's how it started out. And then we got seen over the weekend. It was a very long weekend waiting to find out what on earth was going on, because all the top consultants don't work at the weekends. And then on the Monday, we were taken to one side where we were basically told then and there that unfortunately George was going to die. The tumour was big. It was removable. It wasn't an area that was removable, but it had spread to his brain fluid. And because of the encasing on his spine, it was basically uncurable, they believed at that point. And that's basically where my journey began.
Yeah. Michelle, thank you for, you know, sharing that, and so eloquently. I mean, you know, before this awful experience came about for your family, you know, what do you wish you'd known? You know, this is your chance to help parents locally. What do you want to say to them?
Well, it's very difficult because I feel like I was on it as much as I could have possibly been on it.
Yes.
But what I would really like parents to just know is when you've got a gut instinct that there is something wrong with your child, you need to stick by that. You need to stick by your guns and say, no, I know my child. I stood in the hospital of the L&D and they had my son walking from one part of the ward to the other saying, he looks fine, look, he can walk. And I kept saying to them, you might think I'm crazy, but I'm telling you, that is not his walk. Now, you know how your child walks, and if your child starts walking suddenly differently, you know it, don't you? And the best advice I can give is, if you notice there is anything unusual about your child, you need to stick by that, and you need to keep going back to the doctors until you're happy with what you've been told. I mean, if I'd have known the fact that a CT scan wouldn't have ever picked up the abnormality in George, I'd have insisted on an MRI one straight away. But as I say, I didn't know anything about all of this to start off with. But it's about knowing your child. And I also think it's a bit silly that as soon as I'd taken my husband to the doctor, the doctor almost sat up and paid me more attention, because he thought, well, if she's managed to drag a husband here, she obviously does really think there's something wrong.
Michelle, very briefly, tell us about George's Twinkle, the fundraising page that you've set up in his memory.
Okay, so I've just been doing only a small bit of fundraising on Facebook, just got a small Facebook page. I've got about 480 people following at the moment and getting involved. Most of the people that have helped us fundraise are all people from Harpenden, Wheat Hampstead and St Albans areas.
Yeah.
We've had many different things happen. We've had cake and coffee mornings where all the local bakers have donated cake and coffee. And
great.
We've basically, people have come along to an event and bought the coffee and cake. And we've raised, so far, we've raised £20,000 for the
Brain
Tumour Charity.
So listen, just for listeners' benefit, they can go to George's Twinkle on Facebook and they can link to you that way.
Yeah, we're just trying to basically, I mean, raising awareness is great. Trying to get people to look onto the HeadSmart.
Absolutely. And we're going to have James Walsh from the Brain Tumour Charity, who runs that campaign, a little bit later in the show.
Oh, brilliant.
So thank you so much for joining us, Michelle, and stay tuned for the rest of the programme. We really appreciate your input.
Thank you, Michelle.
Lovely. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, Sharon, we're going to bring you in at this point. Sharon Brunton. You were listening there to Michelle's story, and of course it means, you know, it's you're nodding away there as you hear her story, because unfortunately it rings so many, you know, You've reflected in your own story. You have a son currently going through the experience.
Yes, I do.
So tell us a little bit about your story, and then we'll move on to what you've got, again, a lot of opinions about what parents need to be aware of as well.
Richard became ill in January last year with persistent vomiting, and then in May started complaining of headaches. I took him to the GP who, because of I have a daughter with a brain tumour as well, so he instantly recognised that the symptoms could be a brain tumour, so referred us to see a paediatrician in Watford. But unfortunately, Chad became very ill over the weekend. On the bank holiday Monday, we took him to Lister, where they found a brain tumour, and then he was blue-lighted straight away up to Addenbrookes.
Right, so they both ended up in Addenbrookes. It seems to be quite a centre of expertise.
Yeah.
And now, you, Michelle mentioned the campaign that Head Smart.
Yeah.
Now, and you were nodding when she mentioned some of the symptoms that she realised were pertinent and sort of brought with her to the doctors. What would you say? Go back to that symptom that Chad had in the early days, persistent vomiting.
Vomiting every day. Yeah, every day.
For how long?
From January to May. Every day.
And that is a symptom that often parents, they think it's a food upset.
I did, yeah.
Or a stomach upset or something linked to something else. Even though you had a child as well who'd had
it. But her symptoms were so different. So, and Chad never had any of the balance issues, whereas Talisa did have the balance issues. So their symptoms were so different. And when we took Chad to Lister, I actually took a photograph of Talisa's MRI results and said to the nurses, look, I want a scan today because I'm so worried that this is a brain tumour because of the headaches. He said that there was too much air in his head.
Right.
And I remember Tilly saying the same thing. So, and they said, look, his heart rate's great, everything, his blood pressure's good, so we very much doubt it, but we'll see. And so they didn't do the scan on the Monday, and on the Tuesday they phoned me to say we've got a scan on the Wednesday, and Chad was screaming on the sofa, and they said, is that Chad? I said, yes, they'd bring him straight in, and we did, and then they found the tumour.
Now tell us a little bit about these difference in scans. You're an absolute expert.
I am,
unfortunately,
and
actually, now.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about what's not going to detect a brain tumour and what is.
So we were offered a CT scan on the Monday, and both Tom and myself turned around and said no.
Right.
We said we don't want a CT scan, we want an MRI scan. And I knew that in some cases the CT scans don't pick up the tumours, but I knew the MRI scan would pick up anything. So we weren't prepared to take that risk. I wanted an MRI scan, that was it. So I waited to the Wednesday for the MRI scan.
And in saying you're an expert, I mean, you have spoken to hundreds of parents in the same situation.
Yeah.
What is your opinion, A, on the range of symptoms that parents need to look out for? Would you just direct them to the HeadSmart website?
I would now, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Had I had one of those cards in front of me, I think I might have sort of straight away said, hang on a minute, persistent vomiting.
Yeah, it's not something I... Would you... Shirley, you've worked with children for 25 years. Would you even have known that?
No. Absolutely not.
I mean, Talisa had the balance issues, double vision and the sore neck, whereas Chad had none of those.
Right.
He never had the double vision right up until we got to Addenbrookes. Then he started to experience that. So, and the loss of balance and the head to one side. I've spoke to parents since who's... children have all had that, whereas Chad had none of that. So, and his tumour was at the back in his cerebellum, a medulloblastoma. And we were told that had we not found it when we did, a couple of weeks later, it would have been too late. It would have spread down to his spine. So we were very, very lucky.
So there's a sort of a theme here of parental persistence.
And also, I think because of Tilly having her tumour, I insisted on an MRI scan, whereas I didn't with Tilly. And it took 6 months for her to be diagnosed. And I, they kept putting me off. But this time I was adamant, I want an MRI scan. And then I'll see a clear scan and then I'll leave it be. But
I mean, you also have to say, thank God for Google, because, she wouldn't have found the HeadSmart campaign otherwise.
No.
Now, what would you say also, Sharon, about, people have no concept of what you're going through. And I think when I asked you about your daily life, it's sort of unbearable to even think about what you go through as a mother. But what keeps you going? How do you sustain yourself? And what are you?
You just have to stay positive. You have no choice, and every day is different. And no 2 days are the same. So he could be really well one day and he could be really sick the next day. But, he's positive as well. So.
And he's 13 now.
He'll be 13 in May.
So he's out of school.
He hasn't been at school since... he hasn't done a full week at school since January. He's been out of school permanently since May. So
what would you say that the daily worries differ from the sort of major worries? You know?
Now, because he's having chemotherapy at the moment, so the daily worries are his neutrophils are very, very low. So he's neutropenic, which means he's open to infections. So I have to be very careful who comes in the house and just visit him. His blood levels are very low. So I have to just take extra care, especially at this time of the year with coughs and colds and stomach bugs. So he can't go into school to see his friends at the moment because he's just not well enough. Mm. And he's not even well enough for chemo, so that was cancelled this week. So every day is different. You just have to take one day at a time.
And I think, would you say, what did you do you find is most, is it how vital is it that you have such a great support around you? You have great
definitely.
People in your life who are helping.
I do, yeah. You have to stay strong and positive because if you don't, you know, you wouldn't be able to get up in the morning because
now,
it is.
We interviewed earlier a very famous doctor, Christian Acheline. He's from the Great Ormond Street Hospital. Now, the actual recording, I'm not sure we're going to actually be able to play it because it was quite poor quality. It was at the end of his day. He'd just come out of surgery, you know, and it was on the phone and I tried to record it. But I just wanted to tell you all what he actually said and have you respond, Sharon. He said basically that it is a relatively rare thing that children have brain tumours. However, he did bracket that and say they're actually quite underreported.
They are, yeah.
Yeah. And social media, he said, has played an enormous part in raising awareness because on Facebook we can see, for example, George's story and find out what the symptoms are. We've even posted them up this week on our own Facebook. He said that children tend to come earlier to him these days because of raising awareness, which is very positive. And he said that one of the all of the array of symptoms that you'll find on the HeadSmart card, an important one is the headaches normally because children hardly ever have headaches. So when they have them, especially in the morning, he said that was quite a warning sign. The persistent vomiting, be aware of that. I asked him if we should be taking our children regularly to ophthalmologists. He thought opticians generally do a good job and refer children routinely to him. He felt that I asked him about mobile phone technology. I just asked, you know, about that they know very, as you know, Sharon, brain tumour research is hugely underfunded. And he basically said that they need to learn more about why brain tumours come in the first place and about the way in which different brain tumours react to different medicine. So we know very, he said it needs more money. And recently in medicine generally there have been lots of funding calls for fundraising. He said the prognosis for children is much better than even 5 to 10 years ago. And they learned, for example, they know a lot more about the molecular structure of brain tumours, which is making a difference. And they've even gotten much more precise technology so they can remove a lot of brain tumours effectively with little devices. And that the radiotherapy is much more precise now. He thought that parents on the whole need to think about other associated factors with brain tumours. So in general, things like seizures. Parents might see their child having occasionally. He felt that was a red flag. Any neurological deficit, walking funny, feeling off balance, and nausea may appear, but not the vomiting. So there's all sorts of different things. He was quite optimistic about the future, about the technological advances, and said he was doing the best job he could. And just at the end of the interview, I thanked him for the amazing work he does and how grateful we are. So I'll try and maybe post the interview up on the Facebook page later. What would you say in response to the things that he mentioned there?
The headaches, we didn't experience the headaches until the last couple of days. And seizures, I think they come right at the very end. I mean, Tilly wasn't diagnosed for 6 months and her brain tumour was huge and she had a cyst as well and she never had a seizure. So the seizures, I think, are when it's...
Later stage.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And he's probably seeing children that are later stage in reality. Yeah. So it's like, I think the message, would you agree, Shirley, from Michelle, is about your maternal instinct.
Definitely, yeah.
And she was saying to me, certainly, you know, don't feel like you're being a pain when you go to the doctor. She went back and back again, you know, and she thought the doctors were implying, well, not necessarily implying, but, you know, she was a bit of a neurotic mummy. But, you know, it sounds like you were very... particularly with Chad.
I mean, they kept saying it won't happen in a family twice, you know, you won't get it twice, but they'd never heard of it before. But my GP, you know, he had a gut feeling, so when I went back to see him after Chad was diagnosed, he said I wasn't surprised. And I took Chad to the opticians on the Wednesday before going back to the GP on the Friday. Mm. And they checked all over and she did a report for the doctor, saw nothing. And again, with Tilly, they never saw anything the week before she was diagnosed with hers.
Right. So some children, effective, and
depends
others,
where it is. Okay. They said, she said to me, if there's anything at the front, we'll see it. If it's at the back, we don't tend to see it.
Yeah. That's very useful. So. We'll take a little break, Sharon. Thank you. And we'll come back with another amazing charity. It's the Brain Tumour Charity. And they actually run this awesome Head Smart campaign. Yep. So we'll come back in a little second with James Walsh from that charity. Welcome back to The Parent Show. We've had wonderful guests tonight sharing their very difficult stories about their children and what they've been going through. And that was thanks to Michelle Rod, who joined us earlier. And we've got Sharon Brunton, who just shared her story. We've got on the line a representative from a wonderful charity, the Brain Tumour Charity, James Walsh. Hope you're on the other end there, James.
I am. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us tonight. We're taking a great opportunity to flag up the work of the Brain Tumour Charity. You're the policy person?
Yeah, I'm the campaign and policy manager. I started with the charity in October. I'd just like to sort of thank Michelle and Sharon for relating their stories. I know it's a very hard thing to talk about. I'm having personal experience myself, and it's that kind of testimony which helps raise awareness on the ground. So I'd just like to thank them for coming on the radio tonight.
Yeah, they've been fantastic and they're doing a great service to all parents. Yeah. And well done to you too. This Brain Tumour Charity is the largest leading brain tumour charity in the UK and the second largest in the world.
Yes, it is, yeah. I mean, we're starting from a fairly low base because brain tumours are a rare cancer and it's grossly underfunded. So we're trying as part of the charity to raise awareness of brain tumours in general, but specifically through a Head Smart campaign, childhood brain tumours.
And it's wonderful that it's actually been flagged up naturally by Michelle tonight, and Sharon has been educating me on the Head Smart card, which we are hoping that every parent listening will also tell their friends that there is a card that you can carry in your wallet that will make a difference.
It's about spreading the word. I mean, like I said, I started in October. I've already met with MPs in Parliament who are very sort of keen to get on board with this, and we're meeting Jane Ellison, who's the new Minister of Health, next week to try and get a sort of national rollout. So I'm very excited about that. But to date, we've already got 900,000 cards out to the various councils, to schools and to GP surgeries. So with the card, parents and, importantly, healthcare professionals will become more aware of the symptoms to look out for, so we don't have children passing away at a young age or living with disabilities.
Tell us about the card. What can people expect to read on it?
Yeah, it's basically a small pocket-sized card. You can download it from the websites, but obviously we can, from the Brain Tumour Charity offices in Farnborough, send out as many as people want. It's pocket-sized. It opens up into like a three-panel page with under five preschool symptoms, so for children 0 to 5, symptoms for children 5 to 11, and symptoms for children 12 to 18. They're broadly similar, but the symptoms for the older children, the 12 to 18, include delayed or arrested puberty, slow growth. And I think key to understanding this is looking at the symptoms together. So recurrent headaches and blurred or double vision. If people sort of pick up on that, then that's a real signifier to go and get it checked out. I think Michelle spoke earlier on about trusting your instinct. I mean, a parent's instinct is the strongest thing in the world. And if you feel something's wrong, please do get it checked out. Because 9 times out of 10, you might be right.
And James, tell us, the Head Smart campaign, tell us about how it's managed to cut the average diagnosis. What does that mean?
Basically, Head Smart started in 2011. And it started a bit of research carried out by the Brain Tumour Charity, which led to NHS accreditation. Back then, the time to diagnosis, so if a child exhibits symptoms, the time for diagnosis was 9.1 weeks, which is far too long. The average in America and Europe is 5 weeks. We've got it down to 6.1 weeks at the moment, 6.9 weeks at the moment, with the aim being 5 weeks and lower. And obviously the key thing about all this is lowering the time to diagnosis increases chances of survival and tackling disabilities. So treatments are more effective if it's caught early. And I think one of the key things sort of to note is a lot of healthcare professionals, GPs, might deal with a brain tumour once in their career. And the symptoms kind of mimic other childhood illnesses like meningitis, so therefore it might not be picked up straight away. So it's about increasing awareness of the symptoms, specific symptoms of a brain tumour.
And one of the things the doctor, I'll just bring in Sharon here as well, she's nodding away about that. The doctor that I spoke to today in Great Ormond Street, he said that these parents are experts. As Sharon, you mentioned that today, that GPs will actually maybe never even see a child who's has
that's
brain
tumour.
And so that's very, very exciting. So it sounds like you're making great progress, James.
Well, I think the thing to sort of note is that it is the parents who are really driving this. We've got community champions at the brain tumour charity, and their families use mothers or fathers whose child has got a brain tumour or had a brain tumour, and they've got involved with the campaign. We've got one, Sasha Banks and Gilks, who's really driven the parliamentary work. I mean, she's amazing what she's done in terms of reaching out to MPs and the ministers. And it's the people on the ground driving it. So the Brain Tumour Charity is doing the logistic work behind, but it's the people on the ground, the parents, who are really moving this forward.
And, you know, I wonder if you can just put it in context for us, some of us who know so little about it, because we're very blessed that our lives haven't been interrupted by this yet. You know, what amount of funding is going into helping your charity, you know, compared to, say, breast cancer? Or it's very little, isn't it?
I think it's 1.7%. It's definitely below 2%, which is one of the lowest, if not the lowest, in the cancer, you know, the cancer illnesses. It's far too little. A lot of the work we do research as well as Head Smart, and we fund a lot of research projects in things like biomarkers to try and find the cause of the brain tumours. Ultimately, it's about finding a cure, so this doesn't affect people the way it is. And we did a piece of research actually just before Christmas. We interviewed about 300 people who live with brain tumours, and the statistics were 38% of those were diagnosed five or more times after seeing a GP. So it took five or more visits to be diagnosed, and that's a shocking figure.
James, obviously we're talking about children tonight, but adults. This is the biggest killer of adults under 40.
Yes.
So this is, you know, a subject for all of us to pay attention to.
Yes.
I mean, that is really shocking. And what else did your research uncover?
It's a problem that's also an issue with older people and other parts of the NHS is care. The care, advice and support and information. People get diagnosed with a brain tumour, and it's pot luck whether you have a good doctor who knows what they're talking about or even their bedside manner. And these things are so important. It doesn't seem important how people talk to you. But if you're living with this and you're suddenly confronted with the reality of a brain tumour and the treatments that go with that, you need to have the best possible care. And that's not always the case at the moment. And that's a piece of work we'll be taking forward over the next year, you know, in addition to Head Smart, to try and improve care and, you know, the information available to people.
And James, if people want to get hold of these cards, do they just literally ring you up or go to your website and contact you that way?
Yes, you go to the website, which is www.headsmart.org.uk or www.thebraintumourcharity.org. Of course, give me a call on 01252. I've lost my number.
Nobody knows their phone numbers off by heart, James.
If you get through to us on my email, I'll give you my email. It's james.walsh@thebraintumourcharity.org.
Brilliant.
So now just get in touch and we can help out with the cards.
Wonderful. Just lastly, James and Sharon, what would you say? Sharon obviously is going through this awful experience at the moment, as is her son. But James, what would you say about parental support? And Sharon, what would you say? What has been, you've mentioned the Head Smart campaign, and what would both of you say that has helped you get through the experience?
For me, I think if I stopped another parent having to go through what I've gone through, it would mean a hell of a lot. I suppose, like Michelle as well, the more people that know about it, that would recognise the symptoms early, so they haven't got to go through what we've gone going through. You know, it's as soon as they're diagnosed with a brain tumour, that's when the treatment starts. So it's got to be early.
Yeah.
And is there a mechanism either via your website, James, or Sharon, that you're aware of, where parents, if they're worried about, you know, when they're going through it, that they can ring up and get support? Is there a sort of specialist helpline? Or
I know we contacted Brain Tumour UK when Tilly was diagnosed with hers, because she was 18, so she was classed as an adult, so we had a lot of support from them.
We have a support line in Farnborough at the Brain Tumour Charity. I can give a number for that if...
Yes, please, that would be wonderful.
It's 0808 800 0004, and that's our support line. So yeah, if anyone any concerns, issues or questions, please do give us a call.
Brilliant.
It's about raising awareness. I'd like to thank you for bringing us up tonight in this show.
Thanks a lot, James. We really appreciate it.
Thanks very much.
Listen online at radioverulam.com.
We were just talking to the brain tumour charity before the break, and Sharon, and there's another charity who want to come in tonight to talk about the wonderful work they do. And we're very pleased to say we've got Laura Woodcock from the Teenage Cancer Trust, hopefully on the phone.
Hello, good evening. Thank you for inviting me to speak this evening about the Teenage Cancer Trust.
Well, the floor is all yours. Tell us a little bit about the work that you do.
Brilliant. So, in a sort of nutshell, the Teenage Cancer Trust is the only UK charity dedicated to improve the lives and outcomes of 13 to 24-year-olds who are diagnosed with cancer. The statistic is at the moment that 7 young people are diagnosed every day with cancer, which equates to something 2,400, I believe, each year. We actually fund and build specialist units specifically designed for 13 to 24-year-olds in NHS hospitals. And it was interesting to hear Sharon and Michelle talk about Addenbrookes, because we actually have a Teenage Cancer Trust unit at Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge, and these units are specifically designed with teenagers and young people in mind. The charity believes that teenagers should be teenagers first and cancer patients second, so we fund and build specialist units and provide specialist nurses in these units, and we provide other services such as an education program where we go into schools to teach young people and the teachers about cancers, types of cancers, signs and symptoms. We host an international conference for medical staff around the world. We also provide a conference called Find Your Sense of Tumour, which is specifically aimed for the young people. We get about 300 young people in October each year that they go to Centre Parks, and they get to meet other young people and spend a whole weekend together and just discuss their experiences and have a really good weekend together. And we also have an action week, which recently started 2 years ago, where we're trying to raise awareness of cancers within young people and the 5 common symptoms of cancer, so that people can look out for the signs and symptoms. And it's interesting to hear Sharon and Michelle mention about the diagnosis with GPs and how things can be misdiagnosed or there is a delay in diagnosis. So that's a big piece of work the Teenage Cancer Trust are focusing on, about earlier diagnosis to improve survival rates.
The theme that Shirley and I've recognised tonight is that parents have to be empowered and knowledgeable about a lot of these issues, because, you know, GPs have a lot on their plate, and these things do come quite rarely into their practice.
Yes, and something that Teenage Cancer Trust are also trying to focus on is actually empowering the young person, because nobody knows your body better than yourself. And, you know, young people aged between 13 and 24 do find it difficult to go and see their GP, especially if they decide to go on their own or if they do take a parent. So we've actually started to launch, with the Teenage Cancer Action Week, a small A5 flyer which gives the 5 signs and symptoms. And if a young person, you know, even has 1 or 2 of the symptoms, if they fill that form out and take it to the GP, similar to what Michelle was saying about her Google results, that can, you know, if you can help the GPs, because the young person knows their body better than anybody, and if something isn't right, I do agree, be persistent, keep going back, don't ever feel that you're being a nuisance.
Laura, I mean, from what you've told us, your cancer trust is already doing masses of stuff for teenagers.
Yes.
I have to be honest, I wasn't really aware of your trust. I mean, how are young teenagers being made aware? You know, what's your logo? Where do you advertise? How do people know that you're out there?
Yep. We've been around 23 years. We opened our first unit in 1990. And what we're doing is we're getting very involved with schools. We do go into schools and educate young people. So any schools that would like to learn about teenage cancers and want to get involved, we actually have an education and advocacy service where we can go in and educate for teachers, young people, because cancer can affect and change the way a young person is, and I think a school needs to be educated that young people do get cancer. We've also got huge support from local companies and larger companies such as the Body Shop. If you start to look at the Body Shop windows, you'll often see the Teenage Cancer Trust logo. We do have a huge event in March at the Royal Albert Hall, which is about a week, week music gigs that people can buy tickets to and come and see. So we're on the increase all the time about raising awareness of who the charity are. And we also have local appeals. We're quite heavily involved in raising awareness throughout East Anglia because we have the unit at Addenbrooke. So we're always happy to be in the paper or be on the radio. So this has been a huge opportunity to raise awareness just speaking on here this evening. So thank you.
No, you're welcome. Do you know if there's anything specific going on in Hertfordshire or Bedfordshire?
There's lots of things going on in Hertfordshire. One thing in particular that does come up in Hertfordshire around June time is an event called Royston in Blue, which is a 5K run walk that we invite anybody and everybody to come along, dress up in blue and take part. And you can even bring dogs, and it's a good day, fun day out. But there's also lots of events that get published on the Teenage Cancer Trust website of things that are going in and around on the area. So we do have an East Anglia page on the Teenage Cancer Trust website that people can have a look at to look for local events that are going on.
Okay, that's good to know. We can advertise that too, can't we?
Yeah, that's
Kathy?
Wonderful. Just those local events to Hertfordshire, I think it'd be great if people were. And Sharon's been nodding at a lot of what you said because she was saying that has your Chad benefited from one of those teenage cancer suites?
No, because he's 12, so it's Click Sergeant we work with, but he's 13 in May. So, and when he goes back to school, that's interesting because I think it's. The kids that he's at school with, you know, you mentioned cancer and the first thing they thought he was going to die. So for them, it's a scary word. Mm. So for someone to go in and talk to them, I think that's a brilliant idea.
Yeah, that's a very good point,
really,
isn't
good.
It?
Yeah.
The schools work that you do.
And we don't scare people. You know, we don't go into the schools and frighten anybody because sometimes that can, people, you know, it can be frightening to hear the word cancer, but we do go in and just educate young people about the signs and symptoms and how the chemotherapy can affect somebody and the radiotherapy. And so we're all about educating and empowering our young people and the young people's family and friends and school colleagues and things like that. So education is a huge importance in the world of Teenage Cancer Trust.
Okay, well, we've learnt a lot tonight, Shirley, haven't we?
Masses, yeah.
And certainly, I think if you're listening tonight, you can spread the words to your friends and family. You know, raise awareness by leading people to the Teenage Cancer Trust website. To, you know, at the very least, I think we should all have these charities on our radar. Mm. And if we're thinking of giving money or fundraising, they're certainly very worthy of our attention, aren't they?
Yeah, and certainly, you know, Michelle was saying that there's a lot going on in Harpenden and St Albans for her
George's Twinkle.
And so if you're doing a coffee morning or you're doing, you know, lots of us run in St Albans, why not make it for one of these charities? They're so underfunded.
Yeah, very badly. So thanks to all our guests. Thank you so much for joining us, Laura.
Thank you for having me this evening.
Have you got any special requests for songs? We're going to play something nice and cheerful just to lead us out of the show.
No.
Or maybe you do, Sharon. What do you think, Laura?
Just play something happy. I quite like the one before, but you can't repeat that.
I wonder, could we repeat that? Is it? No. We're getting a big no-no here from... Well, we'll play something lovely for you in recognition of all the wonderful work you do. Thanks so much, Laura.
Thank you.
All the very best. Thank you. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Now, we just want to round up really, really quickly before we say goodbye, Shirley. Mm. Thanks to Michelle Rodd, to Sharon, to you for coming in and for sharing your story. Really appreciate it. And to Laura Woodcock and James Walsh.
Yeah, especially I have to say to the mums that have shared, because it's a brave thing to do and we were quite nervous to even ask you. So, you know, you're helping other parents, which is one of your kind of passions, isn't it? And
definitely.
I know certainly for Michelle. So
it is, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Well done, everyone. Thanks a lot. Good evening.
Neve Solicitors are proud to sponsor The Parent Show. The friendly team at Neve's includes specialists who can guide you through all the legal ups and downs of family life. Visit nevesolicitors.co.uk.
Neave Solicitors, your complete legal solution.